Dorothy slept most of the morning, and Angela was grateful for that. It gave her a chance to rest as well. There was a rocking chair in the wagon, so Angela sat in it, her lap covered with a blanket and the new baby wrapped up and cradled in her arms. As she looked down at John Edwards' red, scrunched-up face, she took note again of his black hair. Her own children had had hair that dark when they were born, although in both cases it had lightened up some over the years. She remembered when Nathan had been born. His hair had been fair, almost blonde, though it had darkened to the same shade as Roger's. A vague sense of unease stirred inside her. Something wasn't right here, but she couldn't put her finger on what it was. This line of thinking began to take her down a darker path. Ever since that stillborn child, Peter had avoided touching her. Truth to tell, that was the way she had wanted it at first. She had pushed him away enough times so that he had gotten in the habit of not coming near her in bed. Most of the time that was all right, but on occasion she missed his touch so badly she could barely stand it. But life went on, and everyone had crosses to bear. And right now her mind was occupied with helping her sister-in-law and her new nephew, as well as with worrying about the fate of her own children. She had hoped that Preacher would be back with them by now.
Angela?
Right here. You're fine.
The baby.
Somehow, Dorothy found the strength to reach up and stroke the black hair on John Edwards' head.
So beautiful.
Yes, he is.
He looks just like his father.
The smile on Angela's face turned to a frown. She didn't see how Dorothy could say that. The baby looked almost nothing like Roger. If anything, he looked a lot more like... No, it couldn't be. But then she knew it was, and she wondered just how she could have been so incredibly, stupidly blind.
Angela, I have to tell you, you deserve to know about the baby and Peter.
Don't say anything else. Please, don't say anything.
I can't die. With this burden on my soul.
You're not going to die. Just stop thinking about that. You're going to be just fine.
No. You have a right to know. Peter and I... Peter is the baby's father.
There it was. Undeniable, incontrovertible words. A wave of dizzy sickness hit Angela, as if the world had suddenly started spinning in the wrong direction. A shudder went through her. But other than that, she didn't move. She couldn't move. A tear welled from Angela's right eye and trickled down her cheek. The engines didn't give their captives any food at midday. Nate figured they would be forced to go hungry, but Hawley grudgingly let him have some jerky from his pack. Mary and Brad whined about it, of course, but they took the strips of tough dried meat and gnawed on them anyway. Nate didn't waste his time complaining. He was just glad to have something to put in his empty stomach. As the group cut through the heavily wooded foothills, Nate realized just how badly he and his cousins had been lost the night before. They must have spent hours going around and around in ever-widening circles. It was doubtful they would have ever gotten back to the wagons. If the engines hadn't captured them, eventually they would have collapsed and died of starvation if they hadn't frozen to death or been eaten by wolves first. Of course, there was always the chance the Preacher would have found them. Nate couldn't shake the feeling that the mountain man was out here somewhere searching for him. As the afternoon went on, he began to see things that looked familiar to him. A massive lightning-blasted pine, a peculiar rock formation that looked like an old man, a stream that tumbled some 30 feet down a cliff and a foaming waterfall. Nate knew he'd seen these landmarks the day before.
When are we gonna get back to camp?
Never the way we're going.
Haldy spun with an angry glare.
What the hell did you say?
He said we're never gonna get back!
Haldy's hand shot out and grabbed Nate's rent shoulder.
Ow!
What are you talking about? We're riding a trail in them wagons, ain't we?
Yeah, sure we are. We'll be there soon. Please stop shaking me!
You better be telling me the truth.
Sure I am, I swear!
The engines had come to a halt as the commotion broke out. Now Swift Era stalked over.
What is wrong?
This little bastard says something about us going the wrong way, and now he won't tell me what he meant by it.
Honest, Mr. Hawley, I just got mixed up and made a mistake. I didn't mean nothing by it.
Swift Era pointed eastward.
You said the wagons went this way?
They did. They're heading for Garvey's Fort, and that's the way they've been going. Unless...
Hawley looked at Nate again.
Boy, did Preacher decide to go some other direction? You know, maybe head down toward the Platte. There's a few trading posts down there.
I don't know anything about the Platte. We were still going the same way as when you left us.
When Preacher killed my partner and run me off, you mean? You know, I ain't sure I believe you, you little shit. Preacher's just tricky enough to head off in some other direction just to throw me off his trail. I reckon he knew I'd come after him and was afraid of me.
Swift Era put his hand on the handle of the knife sheathed at his waist.
Take us to the wagons.
Sure, I'm taking you to wagons. We're going the right way.
The boy says you are not.
The boy don't know what he's talking about. Anyway, he said we are going the right direction.
The boy lies?
I reckon he's lying all right. Preacher and those wagons have changed directions. I figured they're heading for the Platte River. Now, I can take you there.
I know where the Platte River is.
Listen, you still need me. Now, I can come up on those wagons without those folks suspecting anything. I'll get them off their guard, and then you can take them without any trouble.
You'll help kill the whites?
Hell yes. I'll help kill them. I told you that. Whatever you say, I'll sure do it.
We will not kill you yet. We will take you with us.
I'm much obliged for that. I'll guide you to the Platte.
We do not know for sure that Preacher went there. We must search again.
What, you mean split up the war party?
We'll find him quicker that way. They may still go to Garvey's Fort.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. All we got to go on is this dumb kid's word. He might not have even known where the wagons were when he wandered off.
Did so.
Hawley and Swift Era glared at the boy, but Nate didn't care. All that mattered was that he had slowed down their pursuit, and he had even gotten them talking about splitting their forces. He couldn't hope for a much better result from his little acting job. But he couldn't get the rest of his hopes up yet. He had bought a little time, and that was all. Their future, his and his cousin's, was still in the hands of a bunch of Injuns and a white renegade.
What are they doing, Preacher?
Preacher shinnied down from the pine tree he had climbed up a few minutes earlier so that he could spy on the Arikara war party, which had halted about a half a mile away on the other side of a little valley.
Looks like they're splitting up into two or three different bunches.
Why would they do that?
I ain't got no idea. They got a good strong force. No need that I can see for them to split up, but maybe the war chief in charge of the bunch knows something that we don't, or at least he thinks he does.
The group of Rees they had seen that morning had been joined by others until the war party was at least 40 members strong. A bunch that big would be hard to fight off if they all attacked the wagon train at the same time.
What about the children?
I saw them. They looked like they were still all right.
Thank God.
If they split up, how will we know which group the youngsters go with?
We'll be able to tell from the tracks. There's still enough snow here and there to pick up some prints, and when the snow's all melted, there's bound to be mud. Maybe Dog can help us, too.
Dog came out of the woods. The big wolf-like creature had been ranging far ahead of him most of the day. Preacher ruffled his fur between his ears.
Let's go, fella. You ain't no bloodhound, but I reckon you might be able to pick up a scent if we had something that belonged to one of those kids.
As a matter of fact...
Jonathan reached inside his coat and brought out a small rag doll.
This is Mary's. There's a tear in it, and I was going to try to mend it for us since Angela's been so busy taking care of Dorothy these days. I can sew a bit, you know. An old bachelor skill.
A man who can't sew's up a creek if he needs something mended, and the nearest woman is nigh to 500 miles away.
Jonathan held out the doll.
Do you think Dog could track them from this?
We can give it a try. That way we won't lose the trail for sure. Come here, Dog.
Preacher held the doll under Dog's nose.
Good boy. Now go find Mary.
Dog turned and trotted off, his tail just a wagon to beat the band. Three men walked quickly after him. The tracks Preacher found on the other side of the valley confirmed what he had seen from the tree. The war party had broken up into three groups, and they had fanned out to the east, southeast, and south. From the looks of it, Preacher thought that the engines had decided they might not be going in the right direction. In fact, they had been, but something must have happened to cause them to doubt it. Preacher couldn't figure out that part of it, but the why didn't really matter. What was important was that the bunch holding the kids prisoner now numbered around a dozen again. 4-1 odds weren't good, but at least they were tolerable. Preacher and his companions had a chance now to get the kids away from those engines. They pressed on, moving a little quicker. Preacher felt a growing urgency. This opportunity might be the only one they would get. Angela was sitting in the rocking chair again when Roger looked in the back of the wagon. The baby was sound asleep, nestled next to Dorothy, who was also sleeping.
I'm sorry to bother you. I know you must be exhausted. I just had to find out how they're doing.
They're both asleep. The baby ate a little while ago.
Dorothy is all right?
She seems to be resting comfortably. But she's still awfully weak, Roger. She needs proper medical attention.
We're a long way from that.
Yes, we are. We should have waited for spring. The baby could have been born in St. Louis.
I know, but we just couldn't wait.
From the start, there had been something wrong about this journey. Angela had known that, had sensed the urgency with which Roger and Peter and their father had organized everything. She and Dorothy, along with Jeffrey and Jonathan, had been swept along with the preparations, and the questions about why they had to leave Philadelphia so suddenly had been brushed aside with vague answers, or sometimes none at all.
Can I sit with them for a while?
Goodness, you can do whatever you want, Roger. This is your wagon, and Dorothy is your wife.
Why don't you step outside and get some fresh air?
Thank you. I'll do that.
Roger was a considerate man. A good man. She'd always liked him because of his devotion to his family. Not just to his wife and son, but to his brother and father and uncles, too. He tried to do what was right and best for all of them. At least he had until this fateful and ill-advised journey west. Angela moved to the back of the wagon and climbed out. The sun almost blinded her. It seemed awfully bright to her after being cooped up inside the wagon all day. And the air was even warm, far cry from the icy temperatures of the past few days. Most of the snow had melted.
Angela!
Angela turned to see her husband hurrying toward her. Peter had a rifle in his hand and a worried expression on his face.
Aren't you supposed to be standing guard?
My father is watching for trouble. How are Dorothy and the baby?
They're asleep.
The baby is all right?
He seems to be fine.
Well, that's good. I'm happy for Roger. But what about Dorothy?
I don't know. She came through the birth and it was bad, but she could still take a turn for the worse.
God, I hope not. That would be terrible.
I hoped the preacher would be back by now.
He should have let Roger and I go with him instead of taking those two old men.
Those two old men are your uncles. They happen to love you and the children very much.
I know that. But if it comes down to a fight with Indians or something like that, how much help will they really be?
Enough.
The sun was lowering over the peaks to the west. Its rays cast dappled shadows under the aspens and cottonwoods that thickly lined the banks of the creek. Shadows through which Preacher now glided, like he was one of them. Insubstantial, fleeting, there and then gone. As he approached the spot where the engines had stopped, apparently for the night, he hoped that Jonathan and Jeffrey were in position. He had carefully pointed out where they were to go, told them what to do, and then had given them time to get there. But that didn't mean the old-timers couldn't have been delayed somehow. If they weren't ready, Preacher was walking straight into big trouble. He'd considered waiting until night fell to make his move, but had decided that the warriors would actually be more on their guard then. They were less likely to be expecting trouble now. So now was when Preacher was going to try to snatch those young'uns. Preacher had two pistols, both double-shotted, tucked behind his belt. He carried his Hawkins, sliding it carefully along the ground as he crawled. The dog followed him, also on his belly. Jonathan and Jeffrey were armed with rifles and pistols. Preacher wished he'd had more time to work with the older men on their marksmanship during the first few days of this ill-fated journey. Once the ball started, every shot would have to be a true one. Preacher came to a halt and parted some brush. He saw the Arikara warriors gathered on the bank of the creek. A couple of them were getting ready to build a small fire. The others were busying themselves with other chores. Off to one side, Nate sat with his back against a rock. His younger cousins were on either side of him, and he had his arms around them as if to protect them. The rock had shielded the ground beside it from the sun during the day, so not all the snow had melted. There was still a thin layer of it where the youngsters sat. It'd be mighty cold on their behinds. Not that any of their captors would give a damn about that. Mart Hawley stood near the prisoners, close enough to be guarded without really paying that much attention to him. He was busily engaged in digging a wad of chewing tobacco out of a pouch and packing it into his cheek. Preacher would not have minded putting his first bullet into that son of a bitch. The Rees were more of a threat. He had to deal with them first. The sun was behind the mountains now. Dusk began to settle over the landscape with its usual swiftness. In the brush near the creek, Preacher came up into a crouch and slowly straightened to his full height. Even though he was in plain sight now, the Indians didn't notice him until he stepped through the brush.
Howdy, boys!
Preacher knew which one of the Arikara warriors was the leader of this bunch. The tall, muscular, ugly one who brought the hawk to his shoulder. At the last instant, one of the other Arikara stepped in front of the chief. Preacher let go of the hawk and hauled out both pistols. The second ball deflected slightly, but it still had enough force behind it to carry it into the left eye of the third warrior. Preacher had killed three members of the war party in a matter of a couple of heartbeats, but he knew that that much luck probably wouldn't stay with him. Both Jonathan and Jeffrey's shots were well aimed and found their targets. That made five down. Preacher raised his left-hand pistol. One of the balls tore through a warrior's lungs and sent him to the ground spewing blood, but the other missed, traveling harmlessly over the shoulder of the chief. The ugly son of a bitch seemed to have a guardian angel with him. Preacher dropped the pistols and hauled out his knife, ready to go to carving.
Whoa!
An arrow whipped past his head as he lunged forward. The warrior who had fired had dropped his bow and grabbed for his tomahawk. Preacher twisted the blade and ripped it to the side, opening the Arikara's belly and spilling his guts out on the ground. Preacher bent to scoop up the tomahawk that had been dropped by the man he'd just killed. And then in a blur of pantherish motion, he was among the rest of them, swinging the hawk in brutal strokes and slashing with a knife. Drops of blood flew in the air and fell almost like rain. Dog was in the middle of the fight, too, pulling down the medicine man and ripping his throat out. Jeffrey slid down from the rock and Jonathan splashed across the shallow stream. Some of the Arikara turned to meet this new threat, leaving Preacher with more manageable odds. He caved in a skull, slashed a throat, tripped another man, then buried the head of his tomahawk in the back of the luckless warrior's head. It was a slaughter, pure and simple. Even these hardened Arikara warriors were no match for the frenzy with which Preacher attacked. Preacher swung toward the kids and saw Hawley trying to bring a pistol to bear on him.
Stay back, you bastard! Stay back or I'll kill these little...
Jeffrey launched into a flying tackle that smashed Hawley to the ground. Hawley was bigger and younger and stronger, though, so he was able to throw Jeffrey off. Preacher was about to go to the older man's aid when he had to dart aside to avoid a slashing blow from the war chief's tomahawk. The Indian swung the weapon again in a backhand that was almost too fast for the eye to follow. Preacher was able to drop out of the way of the killing stroke. He rolled to the side and came up lightly on his feet again. Suddenly, Hawley drove his knife into Jeffrey's body. The renegade white man pulled the blade free and drew it back to strike again. Preacher threw the tomahawk that was still in his left hand. The tomahawk smashed into the back of Hawley's left shoulder and lodged there. Hawley fell forward, driven down by the impact of the tomahawk striking. Preacher was already turning back to face the chief's challenge. The chief wasn't there anymore, though. Preacher couldn't spot him in the gathering gloom. He saw that all the other members of the war party were down.
Jeffrey!
Preacher turned and looked and saw that Hawley had staggered to his feet and was running away now, leaving Jeffrey sprawled on the ground behind him. Bending, Preacher snatched up a fallen bow and arrow. The shaft whistled past Hawley as the man ducked into the brush. Preacher didn't much like it. He let Hawley go. The renegade vanished into the gloom of fast approaching night. Preacher hurried toward Jonathan, Jeffrey, and the kids, anxious to see if the young'uns were all right. On his way across the clearing where the Indians had planned to make their camp, Preacher picked up his pistols and quickly reloaded them. Dog was nosing around the sprawled bodies of the fallen warriors. Preacher knew if any of the Indians were still alive, Dog would let him know about it. The kids were already clustered around their great uncles. Jonathan had propped Jeffrey up in a sitting position.
Let me have a look, Jeffrey.
I'm all right.
How the hell you say? Let me see.
Preacher hunkered down beside the two older men. He pulled Jeffrey's coat aside and saw the blood stain on the man's shirt just below his right shoulder. It looked like Hawley's knife thrust might have missed anything vital. A quick further examination of the wound revealed that to be the case. The preacher wadded up a piece of cloth and pressed it to the blood-leaking hole.
Hold that there.
Preacher turned to look at the kids.
You youngins all right?
I'm tired and hungry. And I was scared until you got here, Mr. Preacher.
None of us are hurt. Some of the Indians wanted to kill us when they first caught us, but the chief stopped him.
Hey, I probably figured to use you as hostages if he needed to. How'd Hawley come to throw in with him?
I don't know. He was with him when they found us. Where did he go?
He got away. So did the chief.
Swift Arrow?
If that was his name, yeah, I wouldn't know.
That was his name. He spoke English and talked to Hawley some.
Nate pointed to one of the fallen warriors.
That one there was their medicine man. His name was Badger's Den.
Yeah? Well, his medicine wasn't strong enough to stop Dog. All right, look, listen up. With Swift Arrow and Hawley still on the loose somewhere out there in the darkness, I don't think we can afford to lollygag around here all night. Jeffrey, you reckon you can travel?
Of course I can. If someone will just tie this bandage in place.
Preacher did that, and then Jonathan helped his brother onto his feet. Jeffrey was a mite shaky at first, but he steadied himself and nodded to Preacher.
Let's go.
The six of them, seven if you counted Dog, moved out quickly as soon as Preacher had gathered up all their weapons. He took some of the knives and tomahawks that the Arikara had dropped, too. You never knew when something like that might come in handy. Preacher kept up a fast pace, guiding them by the stars and by his own instincts. He wanted to put some distance between them and the scene of the fight with the Rees. The fact that Swift Arrow had survived the fracas was worrisome. Preacher didn't think the war chief would try to follow him and attack him by himself, but it was possible, even likely, that he would find the other groups that had split off from the war party earlier in the day to come after him. Preacher knew the kids must be worn out. They bore up without much complaining. When he finally called a halt a couple of hours later, though, they flopped mighty gratefully on the ground. Jonathan and Jeffrey sat down on a log.
Jeffrey, how you holding up?
I'm all right. I must admit, though, I'll be quite glad when we get back to the wagons.
You saved us, Uncle Jeffrey. Hawley was gonna shoot us. I never saw you jump around and fight like that before.
You may never see it again, either. I'm not much of a brawler.
No, now, you did just fine. In fact, both of you fellas handled yourself well back there. You'll do to ride the river with.
Thank you, Preacher. Coming from a man like you, that's higher praise than I ever expected to hear.
You two wait here with the kids while I scout around a mite on our back trail, just to make sure that Arikara chief ain't skulking around.
Preacher faded off into the darkness with Dog padding quietly after him. He came back after a few minutes.
No sign of Swift Arrow. If you've rested up enough, we'll get moving again.
Can't we rest a little while longer?
Come on, Mary. Don't you want to get back to your folks?
I do want to see Mama again.
Well, let's go then.
Preacher got him started down a long, narrow valley that they could follow in the moonlight, and then dropped back slightly to bring up the rear. The trouble was going to catch up to him. He wanted it to find him first, so that he could deal with it. A moment later, Preacher saw Nate coming toward him.
Something wrong?
No. I just wanted to come back here and walk with you.
All right. But if I tell you to get back with the others, you skedaddle now, you hear?
Yes, sir. Preacher, can I have a pistol?
You know how to handle a gun?
I've shot one before. They're heavy, but if I hold it with both hands, I can manage.
Uh-huh. You hit what you aim at?
Sometimes. And even when I don't miss by much.
Preacher figured he knew what was going on with Nate. Being captured and held prisoner by the Indians must have made him feel pretty helpless. Now he wanted a gun so he wouldn't have to feel that way again. Preacher could understand that. He drew one of the pistols from behind his belt and handed it to the boy.
It ain't primed. You know how to do that?
Sure. I'll get some powder from Uncle Jonathan and put it in my pocket.
Your mom might not like that.
She won't like me carrying a gun either, but I'm going to do it.
Best you remember one thing. A gun comes in mighty handy, and it can sure enough save your life out here. But there's problems that it can't solve, too. You gotta use your brain for those. A fella who can think fast and straight's gonna come out on top most of the time.
I'll remember. Preacher, that Indian Swift Arrow kept talking about how him and his people had vengeance coming. Like we'd done something bad to him.
You got any idea what he was talking about?
No, not really. But he sure acted like we had done something bad to them instead of the other way around.
Well, maybe we can figure it out when we get back to the wagons and talk to your folks.
It won't do any good for me to talk to them. I'm just a kid. They won't pay any attention to me.
Preacher was tired of not knowing what the hell was going on and why the Arikara were so determined to kill him. When they got back to the wagons, it would be time for a showdown. Time for the Galloways to put their cards on the table. Preacher intended to make sure of that. As night fell, Angela sat inside the wagon and studied Dorothy's sleeping face by the light of the single candle that burned. They'd been friends, more like real sisters than sisters-in-law. She just couldn't figure why Dorothy had betrayed her by sleeping with her husband. But she did know what had to be done next. She was waiting now for Dorothy to wake up.
Baby?
He's right here, and he's fine. You'll probably have to nurse him in a few minutes.
Dorothy closed her eyes for a moment and nodded weakly.
But before then, we have to talk, Dorothy.
Angela, I'm so sorry.
Don't. I don't want your apology. I don't know what happened, but I forgive you for your part in it. What's important now is that things don't get any worse. Listen to me, Dorothy. You haven't told Roger about you and Peter yet, have you?
I couldn't bring myself to tell him.
Then don't. No one needs to know about this but the two of us.
But the baby looks so much like...
Yes, the baby looks more like Peter, but that's not unheard of. Roger and Peter are brothers. Peter inherited his dark hair from one of their ancestors. John Edward could have gotten his from the same place.
I suppose, but don't you think that... Roger has a right to know.
Roger has a right to be proud of his new son. And since you've been sick, Dorothy, you probably don't know everything else that's been going on. There's been some trouble. An Indian attack. And now we're headed back east instead of trying to go on to Oregon. Do you understand, Dorothy? You mustn't say anything to anyone about you and Peter.
I understand, but... I'm so sorry, Angela.
Bart Hawley gritted his teeth against the blinding pain as he twisted his body and stretched his right arm in an attempt to reach the handle of the tomahawk. His fingers touched the branch from which the handle was made. He stretched a little farther. Hawley had crawled into this brush-choked gully after running until he collapsed. He expected Preacher to catch up on him at any second, and he knew he couldn't expect any mercy from the mountain man. Preacher was already legendary as a killer. He wouldn't waste any time. He'd just cut Hawley's throat and be done with it. Preacher hadn't come after him, though, and the only reason Hawley could think of it was that Preacher had probably wanted to get those kids back to safety as fast as he could. He'd been willing to let Hawley go in return for a quicker start.
Bash's gonna regret that.
Hawley finally got his fingers wrapped around the tomahawk. Bart had to get something on the wound and slow it down, or he might bleed to death right here and now. Moss was good for that. He had already felt around in the dark and found some at the base of a tree. He reached out now and got a handful of the stuff. Bart twisted around and tried to slap it on the wound. He wasn't quite reaching it. Suddenly, something plucked the moss from his hand and pressed it to the wound beside his shoulder blade.
Shit, what the hell?
Quiet.
Hawley instantly recognized the war chief's voice.
Be still. You'll not die from this.
How did you find me?
You're a white man, and you're not Preacher. I followed the noise.
Hawley slumped in relief and let the Iroquois attend to his wound. Naturally, Swift Air had experience patching up tomahawk wounds. He packed it full of moss and then tied a pad of cloth torn from Hawley's shirt over the wound. The bleeding had already slowed considerably, and although Hawley still felt mighty weak, he didn't think he was going to pass out.
What are you going to do?
Kill Preacher.
Take me with you.
You'll keep up with me.
I wouldn't miss his killing for the goddamn world.
Preacher and the others traveled all night, stopping only now and then for a short rest. While his companions caught their breath, he checked the back trail or scouted out ahead, dog trotting along with him. By the time the moon set and the starlight waned, the terrain had become flatter, and Preacher knew they were on the edge of the foothills. He spotted the humped white shapes of the canvas coverings in the gray light of dawn. By that time, he was carrying Mary, who was sound asleep. Jonathan had Brad in his arms, with the boy's head resting on his shoulder, and Brad was asleep just like his sister. Nate had taken over the job of helping Jeffrey whenever the wounded man needed any assistance to keep going or to get over some obstacle. The immigrant camp appeared to be completely asleep. No one moved around the wagons. There was no fire. Preacher had a bad moment during which he wondered if the other members of the Iroquois war party had somehow found the wagons and wiped out everybody else. The two old men and the kids might be the only survivors of the group. But then he saw Angela climb out of the back of one of the wagons. She seemed to be all right and didn't act like anything was wrong. She got a bucket and filled it from one of the water barrels.
Aunt Angela!
Angela turned sharply, and in her surprise, she dropped the bucket.
Children!
Mary and Brad were stirring. Preacher set Mary on her feet.
There's your mama, gal. Go see her.
Mama!
Mary hurried to meet Angela. Still half asleep, Brad stumbled after her too.
Oh, my babies!
Angela went to her knees and swept the children into her arms, gathering them to her like long-lost sheep. She hugged them tightly and shuddered from the depth of the emotions coursing through her. Preacher patted Nate on the shoulder.
Go see your pa.
With a grin, Nate ran to meet Roger. Roger swung the youngster up into his arms and hugged him.
You all right, Nate?
I'm fine. Not hurt a bit.
Roger must have felt the gun Nate had tucked behind his belt because he looked down and pointed.
What's that?
A pistol? I reckon I'm gonna go armed from now on.
Roger looked surprised, but he didn't argue the matter. He was too glad to have his son back alive, safe, and sound. The two old-timers limped forward and were greeted by their brother Simon.
Jeffrey, you're hurt.
Oh, it's nothing. Just a little knife wound.
It needs proper patching up. Any trouble here while we were gone?
Nope. But there's a new member of the party. I have a new grandson. John Edward Galloway.
I got a new baby brother?
That's right, son.
Can I see him?
Well, I don't know. Angela?
They're both asleep right now. Your mama really needs her rest, Nate, so it might be better to wait.
Oh, well, I guess it's all right, but I really wanted to see him.
In a little while.
Put me down, Pa. I'm too big for you to be picking me up.
Roger looked like he might have argued that, but he lowered Nate to the ground nonetheless. The sun was almost up now, and the rosy glow in the sky matched the good mood in the camp. Not everything was rosy, though. There was still at least a couple of dozen vengeance-hungry Iroquois out there somewhere, probably no more than a day behind them. Peter was caught up in hugging and kissing his prodigal children, so Preacher motioned to Roger, Simon, Jonathan, and Jeffrey. They came over to him, with Nate drifting along behind Roger. Quickly, Preacher told Roger and Simon what had happened.
Swift Air, the war chief of that bunch, got away, and so did Hawley.
That bastard! I can't believe he allied himself with the savages.
Well, he did. But I ain't worried all that much about him. He might even be dead by now. But Swift Air wasn't hurt, as far as I know, and I reckon he'll be coming after us as quick as he can. He'll likely try to round up the rest of his war party, too. That'll slow them down some, but they don't come on like a house afire. We gotta start putting some miles behind us.
Angela heard that comment and came over to join the men.
We can't go anywhere right now. Dorothy is too weak. I don't think she can stand traveling.
Now, we don't have much of a choice. If we stay here very long, them Rees will catch up to us for sure, and then we'll be in for it.
Preacher, if my wife is too ill to go on, then we don't have any choice. We'll just have to hope that once she's a little stronger, we'll still have time to reach the fort.
You ain't got that much time, and it ain't just because of the engines, neither. There's another snowstorm coming. It's gonna be a lot worse than last one.
How can you know that?
Preacher knows things about this country that none of us do. Take our word for it, Simon. You don't want to doubt what he says.
But you're talking about my wife. We can't take chances with her life.
You stay here and you're taking a chance with everybody's life. Now I'm going. If you folks want to come along, you best get ready to move out as soon as everybody's eating breakfast.
You'd leave us? You'd really abandon us?
If y'all are stubborn enough to throw your lives away, yeah, damn right I would.
Then it seems we have no choice. We can't get back without your help, so we have to go along. But I'm not going to forget this, Preacher. If my wife dies...
If you stay here, she will. You can count on that. Well, Angela gave Preacher the cold shoulder after that, which was probably a good thing, he figured. He knew that when he had first seen her that morning, she had looked mighty damn good to him. And since she was married to somebody else, those were feelings he'd best put a lid on. He chucked over all the horses and the mules while Angela was fixing breakfast. They had benefited from a couple of days' rest. He would need all the strength and stamina they possessed for the long, fast haul to Garvey's fort. Nate came over to Preacher when the food was ready.
Preacher, come and eat.
Much obliged. I'm glad to see at least you ain't mad at me, Nate.
Well, I'm worried about my ma, of course. I wish we could stay here and let her rest after having that doggone baby. But Aunt Angela and Uncle Peter and Pa, well, they didn't see Swift Arrow close up or spend time as his prisoner. Him and Holly talked about killing all of us, Preacher. We can't let them catch up to us or my Ma will die for sure.
Preacher ate a plate of bacon and biscuits and washed it down with good, strong coffee. Afterwards, he gathered the men. All right, get the teams hitched up. We'll be pulling out in a few minutes. The men followed orders without complaint, but he saw the resentful looks Roger and Peter gave him. He didn't give a damn how they felt. They would thank him when they got to Garvey's fort and still had their hair. Preacher saddled the dun and then swung up on the back of the rangy horse. He rode to the front of the first wagon. Lead the way, dog. Dog loped out in front of the wagon. Preacher pointed to him and looked at Jonathan, who had climbed to the seat of the lead wagon and taken the reins. Follow him.
We're being led by an animal?
He'll smell trouble about as fast as I can see it, and he'll take the easiest path, too. Fella can do worse in life than to follow a dog. Smart dog, anyway. They ain't all overly bright, but then again, neither are people. Jonathan shrugged, flapped the reins, and got the wagon rolling. Preacher reined the dun to the side and waved for the others to follow Jonathan. Roger's wagon came next, followed by Peter's, and then the one usually driven by Jeffrey. He couldn't handle a team with his wounded shoulder, though, so Simon had been pressed into service. When all the wagons were moving, Preacher turned and rode back the way they had come. His eyes roved constantly, searching for any sign of pursuit as he dropped back a couple of miles. He didn't see anything out of the ordinary, and finally turned and headed east again. Less than an hour later, he caught up to the wagons and got waves of assurance from all the drivers as he passed, letting them know that they hadn't run into any trouble. That morning, the breeze had still been out of the south, but before noon, the air went dead calm, which Preacher considered a bad sign. Sure enough, a little while later, it began to blow from the north, and it wasn't a breeze this time, but a hard wind, and a cold wind. Another storm was on the way, just as he had predicted. By the time the pilgrims stopped for late lunch, temperature was plummeting.
How in the world did you know it was going to do this?
I can't explain it. You spend a few winters out here, though, and you get to where you can tell what's coming. Something about how the air smells, maybe.
Is it going to be worse than last time?
I reckon we'll find out. Just hide and watch. Angela kept tucking extra blankets around Dorothy and John Edward as the temperature dropped during the afternoon. Unlike earlier in the trip, when Dorothy had been running a fever, now her body temperature seemed to have gone down, just like the weather. Her lips took on a faint bluish tint. She was out of her head most of the time,
and although Angela didn't want to admit it even to herself, she was losing hope. If Dorothy had been in a comfortable bed, in a nice snug house, being attended to by a physician, she might have stood a chance of pulling through. But here she was, rocking along on a pallet in the back of a wagon with nobody to take care of her except a woman with no medical training whatsoever. If Dorothy died, that would leave Roger without a wife, and Nate and John Edward without a mother. Angela wouldn't wish that on anyone. Yeah, she had been angry when she first discovered that Peter was really the baby's father. If Dorothy had been healthy and had told her that she had slept with Angela's husband, Angela would have cheerfully throttled her. Now, though, she didn't feel anything but sympathy for Dorothy. The same could not be said about her feelings towards Peter, though. Talk about throttling somebody. But she knew she couldn't do that. Couldn't do anything except keep what she knew to herself, at least until they got back to civilization. When that happened, there would have to be a confrontation. She would have to tell Peter that she knew what he had done. She couldn't keep it all bottled up inside.
Peter, please, don't!
Angela leaned closer and frowned. Dorothy was reliving the memory of something, unaware in her ill state of where she was or what was really going on. Was it possible that Dorothy hadn't wanted Peter to do what he'd done? That Peter raped his own brother's wife? The thought made a chill go through Angela that had nothing to do with the weather. She had been married to Peter Galloway for almost 10 years. She would have thought that she knew him about as well as one human being could know another. She had 2 children with the man. To think that he might be capable of doing a thing like that was almost beyond Angela's comprehension. If it was true, she couldn't stay married to Peter. She didn't know what she would do, but she was certain of that. Somehow, their marriage would have to come to an end. The wind blew in more than the cold. Clouds followed it, racing across the sky. The preacher glanced at the tumbled gray masses and thought about how much the weather had changed since that morning. It had been almost warm then. Now it was like there wasn't even a vestige of warmth left anywhere in the world. With the thick overcast, night would fall early. The preacher rode on ahead and started looking for a good place to make camp. They were on the edge of the plains now, the foothills having fallen behind during the day. The terrain rolled gently, which made for faster traveling, but didn't provide much in the way of shelter. There would be no cliffs or caves where they could get in out of the wind. The best they could do would be to draw the wagons in a tight circle and crowd the livestock inside. The preacher reined in and twisted in the saddle, looking for whoever had just taken a pot shot at him. He saw 3 riders come boiling over a nearby rise and gallop toward him. Feathered headdresses streamed out behind him as they rode. Goddamn Pawnee. Preacher never gotten along well with a Pawnee. Now it looked like he had one more reason not to like him. The next ball shot overhead, missing Preacher by a good margin. Some engines were good shots, but most of them could barely hit nothing, especially from the back of a running horse. Preacher lifted the hawk. One of the engines went backward, hit the ground, and then lay still. Preacher swapped the empty hawk in for the one in the saddle sheath that was loaded. The engines had split up and were coming at him from 2 different directions now. The heavy lead ball struck the horse in the neck. The animal's front legs folded up, and as the mortally wounded horse fell, the Pawnee on his back sailed through the air over its head. That left only one of the Pawnee. And as he galloped toward Preacher, only 20 yards away now, he thrust out his rifle and fired it one-handed. Damn! The Pawnee's ball struck the barrel of the Hawken in Preacher's hand and tore the rifle loose from his grip. Preacher's hand tingled and throbbed from the impact. Preacher kneed the dun and sent the horse lunging forward as the surviving Pawnee reversed his rifle and swung at a Preacher's head like a club. The blow missed, but the Pawnee recovered with blinding speed and launched himself from the back of his horse just as Preacher was pulling one of his pistols from behind his belt. The collision jolted Preacher out of the saddle. He fell, smashing into the ground with the blood-crazed Pawnee still on top of him. The engine got the fingers of his left hand around Preacher's throat, while his right groped for the handle of the knife at his waist. The Pawnee pulled the blade from its sheath and lifted it high overhead. Preacher slammed the pistol in his hand against the side of the Pawnee's noggin, sending him sprawling. Preacher rolled the other way, putting a little distance between them. As he came up on his knees, he saw that the Pawnee was drawing back the knife again, this time getting ready to throw it. not wanting to take any chances. Preacher palmed out the other pistol and thumbed back the hammers of both weapons as he lifted them. Preacher looked around to see Dog standing over the pawnee who had been thrown from his horse and then crushed by it. Preacher climbed to his feet and walked over to check on the man. He was still alive, but his arms and legs were broken, and from the looks of his body and the blood-stained buckskins, he was all busted up inside, too. A swipe across the throat from Preacher's knife finished him off. Preacher didn't feel bad about doing it, neither. If he had been hurt that bad, he would have looked on such an act as a kindness. Preacher straightened and looked around him. Evidently, the three Pawnee had been alone because he didn't see any more of them. Probably out on a last hunting trip before the real snows came, and when they had seen a lone white man riding along, they had decided to have some fun with him. Well, their sport had backfired on them. Preacher left the bodies where they had fallen, reloaded his pistols, found the Hawken that had been shot out of his hands, and then went back to looking for a place to camp. That storm wouldn't hold up just because he'd been forced to spend a few minutes killing those Injuns. Preacher kept a close eye out for more Injuns just in case those three Pawnee had split off from a larger group. He didn't see any, though. Except for him and the Dunn and Dog, the vast plains might as well have been deserted. A short time later, he came upon a buffalo wallah and knew he wouldn't find a better place for the pilgrims to camp than that. The wide depression in the earth wouldn't offer much protection from the wind, but any was better than none. Preacher marked the spot in his mind and then wheeled the horse to ride back to the wagon. As Preacher came up to the lead wagon, Jonathan reined the team to a halt.
We heard shots, and then we passed some dead Indians back there a ways. Did you see them, Preacher? Do you know anything about them?
I reckon I do. They jumped me a mite earlier this afternoon.
You killed all three of them?
Yeah. Well, now, it seemed like the thing to do at the time, considering they were shooting at me and hell-bent on lifting my hair.
Yes, of course. I didn't mean to imply that you did anything wrong. I was just surprised, although I don't know why I should be. I saw how you fought with those Indians when we took the children away from Swift Arrow. 3-1 odds wouldn't mean anything to you.
Well, don't be too sure of that. But sometimes a fella just gotta go ahead and do what has to be done, no matter what the odds.
Following Preacher's orders, the men drove on to the buffalo walla and bunched the wagons inside the depression, pulling the vehicles close to each other in a circle. The daylight began to fade with a swiftness that surprised even Preacher. The clouds had to be growing very thick overhead for them to shut out the sun that way. For a while, Preacher seemed to be everywhere at once, helping to unhitch the teams and bring them inside the circle of the wagons. They would have to have a fire, and though there were still clumps of trees here and there, for the most part, the landscape since leaving the foothills had become a treeless prairie. That meant firewood was in short supply. But not buffalo chips, and they would burn too. Preacher put the youngins to work.
Well, you see them buffalo chips on the ground? I want y'all to pick up some of them and make a big pile of them.
What are they?
Nate leaned over and whispered in his cousin's ear.
Ew!
Don't worry, they won't hurt you. And the heat they'll give off when we make a fire out of them will make you feel mighty good tonight when the temperature gets down below freezing.
Do you think it's going to snow again?
It sure might. The kids set to work.
Preacher motioned for Jeffrey to come over, and the older man joined him.
I'd appreciate if you keep an eye on them youngins. I know you got a bad arm, but you can handle a pistol a little with your left hand, can't you?
Certainly. I'll watch over the children and fire a shot if anything threatens them.
That's the idea. Much obliged.
Preacher went on about the task of seeing that the camp was set up properly and safely. By the time full darkness had fallen, a small, almost smokeless fire was burning next to one of the wagons. The mules and horses were on the other side of the circle, kept there by a rope strung from one wagon to another. That didn't leave the humans much room, but they would make do. Right now, that livestock was just about as important as the people. That is, if any of them hoped to make it back alive.
Roger, how's that new son of yours?
The baby seems fine. Angela says he has a good appetite and a healthy pair of lungs.
But your wife ain't doing so good, is she?
Not at all. She's been either unconscious or out of her head all day. I don't know what to do, Preacher. I want to make things right, but I just don't know how.
There ain't much you can do right now, stuck out here in the middle of the prairie like we are. time for thinking about the right thing to do is before you ever took off for Oregon at the wrong time of the year.
I know that now. I guess we'll just keep trying to make it back to that fort you told us about.
That's pretty much all we can do.
Inside the wagon, Angela was thinking about how they would feed John Edward if Dorothy died. She felt terrible about even considering the possibility, but they had to face facts. If Dorothy sank much lower, she wasn't going to make it. If they'd had a milk cow, they might have been able to give that milk to the baby.
No! No! No, Peter!
Hush now. Baby's asleep, so you should rest too.
Angela! How can you stand it? Stand to be around me?
Shh. I'm here to take care of you. You have to get well, for the baby's sake.
The baby. Your husband's baby. Your own husband. You're so good, Angela. I don't deserve...
Hush. Be quiet now, Dorothy.
But Peter is John Edward's father, Angela. You must hate us both.
No. No, I don't. Just... please don't talk anymore.
No. Let her speak if she wants to.
Angela jerked her head around to stare at her brother-in-law. Roger's face was pale in the light from the single candle. He stepped on into the wagon and let the canvas flap fall closed behind him.
If Dorothy has something to say, then let her say it.
She can't say anything right now. She's resting.
I heard her. She was crazy there for a minute, wasn't she? She didn't know what she was saying.
It's true. Dorothy admitted it to me after John Edward was born. Peter is the baby's father.
Roger stood there without saying anything for a long moment, visibly struggling to control his emotions. He stared past Angela at Dorothy and fixed his gaze on his wife's face. Slowly, he moved his eyes down to the tiny, sleeping form nestled next to her. Angela held her breath, thinking that she might be seeing hatred growing in Roger's eyes. But instead, to her great relief, his expression softened, and nothing but love shone on his face.
It's not the child's fault. He had no part in this.
No. No, he didn't.
He's the only truly innocent one among us.
I think it would be a good idea if we didn't say anything to anyone about this. It won't help anything.
There will be something said about it. You can count on that.
Roger turned toward the rear of the wagon.
Roger, wait! If you confront Peter now, it'll just cause trouble.
He caused the trouble already! He slept with my wife, the bastard!
We don't really know what happened.
We know enough. We know that that baby is no son of mine. I should have realized that. He looks so much like Peter.
Roger thrust the canvas aside and pushed his way out of the wagon. Angela caught at his coat again, but he pulled away from her with ease and leaped from the tailgate to the ground. As she hurriedly climbed out behind him, he strode toward the fire where Peter stood along with Simon. Jonathan and Jeffrey were preparing supper while the children stood nearby. The night seemed huge, with the small fire struggling to hold back the all-encompassing darkness.
Peter!
What is it? What's wrong?
Wrong? I'll tell you what's wrong!
Roger jerked the pistol from behind his belt and leveled it at Peter's face, cocking the hammer.
My brother is a traitorous bastard! That's what's wrong! And I'm gonna blow your damn brains out!
Hold it, Roger! Put the damn gun down!
Roger didn't lower the pistol. He stood there with his arms straight out. His face was twisted with anger, and his hand shook a little. Peter stared into the muzzle of the gun, and his face drained to color. Off to the side, Simon, Jonathan, and Jeffrey watched the confrontation in shocked horror.
Pa, no! Don't do it, Pa!
Listen to the boy, Roger. I don't know what you're so head up about, but it won't make it any better for you to shoot Peter.
I don't know about that, Jonathan. Might make me feel better to know that I killed the man who slept with my wife.
Carefully, so as not to spook his brother, Peter lifted his hands and held them palm out toward Roger.
I don't know where you got that crazy idea, but I swear to you...
Save your swearing! I heard it from Dorothy herself. She was talking to Angela, and she said that you're the father of the baby in there.
Roger, please don't. Put the gun down and think about what you're doing.
Think about it, Angela? I can't get the picture out of my head. I can't stop thinking about what he did.
Listen to me, Roger. I don't care what she told you. She wanted it as much as I did. I never forced her.
You raped her?
you attacked your own sister-in-law?
No, I'm telling you.
You've told me enough.
Son, you can't do this. You can't shoot your own brother.
You're right. I can't shoot him.
Roger lowered the pistol the rest of the way and let down the hammer. The gun slipped from his hand.
But I can beat him to death with my bare hands!
With that, Roger leaped forward, swinging a vicious punch at Peter's head. Roger drew back his leg and aimed a kick at Peter's head. Peter shook off the effects of the punch just in time to roll out of the way. As Peter came over onto his back again, he reached up and grabbed his brother's leg. Roger fell, landing heavily on his back. That gave Peter a momentary advantage, and he tried to seize it. He leaped on top of Roger and clawed at his throat, managing after a second to lock his fingers around Roger's neck. Peter planted a knee in Roger's belly to hold him down and began to squeeze. Peter might have choked the life out of his brother, but Roger cupped his hands and slammed them against Peter's ears. Roger bucked up off the ground, arching his back. That move threw Peter off to the side. Roger rolled away.
Both of you, stop it!
Roger and Peter climbed to their feet and faced each other again. A bruise was starting to purple Peter's face when Roger's first punch had landed. Before they could attack each other again, Simon and Jonathan rushed in to grab him and hold him apart.
Stop it! You two idiots!
Simon held on to Roger's arms from behind.
I'm your father! Do what I tell you!
You're through giving us orders, Pa. Let go of me!
Roger brought his heel down hard on his father's instep. He leapt at his brother again. Peter tore away from Jonathan and lunged to meet Roger. Everyone looked around to see Angela standing at the rear of the wagon, smoke curling from the barrel of the pistol in her left hand. In her right hand, she held another pistol, and this one was pointed at the two combatants instead of into the air.
I'll shoot the next man who strikes a blow. That's a promise.
Angela, shoot him. Stop him, for God's sake. I'm your husband.
You should have thought of that about 9 months ago.
I don't care if you shoot me. I'm still gonna kill him.
Roger started to shuffle toward Peter. Preacher covered the distance in a few large strides.
You ain't gonna kill nobody, old son. Now back off. Fight's over.
Roger's fists were still balled. For a second, he looked like he was gonna take a swing at Preacher. But then the thin smile on the mountain man's bearded face must have warned him that that wouldn't be a real good idea. Glaring, he stepped back, then turned and walked unsteadily toward the wagon where Angela stood. He went past her to lean against the vehicle, where he leaned a hand and dabbed the back of it against bleeding lips. Nate came up to Roger.
Pa? Pa, can I help you?
Thanks, Nate. But I reckon it's too late for that.
Angela still had the pistol lined on Peter.
For God's sake, put that gun down, Angela. It's liable to go off accidentally.
Now, Preacher had never held a very high opinion of Peter Galloway's intelligence, and it went down another notch right now. Peter couldn't see that if that pistol went off, it wouldn't be an accident, and he was damn near too stupid to live. Still, they might need every warm body they could muster before this journey was over.
It might be a good idea for you to lower that pistol, ma'am. We don't need any more shooting.
Slowly, Angela lowered her arm until the pistol was pointed at the ground. Preacher took it from her and eased down the hammer. He set the weapon on the tailgate. Angela turned away. Instead of going to her husband, she stepped over to Roger's side and put a hand on his arm.
Come inside the wagon. We'll put some Savin plaster on those cuts on your face. And your hand should probably be wrapped up, too. You may have some broken knuckles.
Peter stared at her in disbelief. She ignored him, and she helped Roger into the wagon. Nate climbed in after him.
Now, you probably made some big mistakes in your life, mister. But they ain't none of them bigger than this one.
I don't need any advice from you.
I wouldn't offer any. I'm just commenting on what a damn fool you are. A fella don't go messing with his brother's wife. And out here, a man who forces himself on a woman usually winds up dead in a hurry. Shot if he's lucky and kicking his life out at the end of a hang rope if he ain't.
Are you threatening me?
Hell no. I'm just telling it to you straight so you'll know not to cross me.
Peter turned away, clearly not wanting any further confrontations tonight. He pulled a rag from his pocket and started wiping at the blood on his face. His two youngins just stared at him, unsure what they were supposed to do. It had been mighty unsettling for them seeing their mama point a gun at their papa that way.
Simon, grab a rifle and go stand guard. Everybody else go on back to what you were doing. Fight's over, and if we're lucky, there won't be any more trouble tonight.
Grudgingly, the others went back to their chores, even Mary and Brad, who resumed piling up buffalo chips near the fire. Nate hadn't returned from the wagon where Angela was patching up Roger's injuries. Preacher wasn't sure what to do with Peter. If the man really had raped his sister-in-law, he ought to be punished. But there was no law out here on the frontier to do it. The nearest law was back in St. Louis. Everywhere west of there, folks took care of their own problems. And to complicate matters even more, there was still the threat of the Arikara War Party lurking behind him. Peter might not be much of a man, but as long as he could point a gun and pull a trigger, he was valuable to the rest of them. For the time being, Roger was going to have to call a truce with his brother. They couldn't be tussling or threatening to shoot each other all the time. They had to find a way to get along. The safety of the whole bunch might depend on their cooperation. Roger climbed down out of the wagon, followed by Angela and Nate. He had bits of plaster stuck here and there on his bruised, battered face, covering up the worst of the cuts and scratches. He still looked very angry, but he was in control of himself again.
Peter.
What are you going to do now? Take another punch at me?
No. I'm through fighting. You're not worth it. I can see that now. But you're no longer my brother.
Oh, come on. Brothers fight. You know the old saying about blood being thicker than...
No. I'll never forgive you, Peter. I see you now for what you are. You're nothing but a selfish coward. And you don't care about anyone except yourself. You've been causing trouble ever since this trip started. If it weren't for you, those damned Indians wouldn't even be after us.
Preacher's ears pricked up at that. He had thought from the start that there was more to the story than he had been told.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Time you fellas put your cards on the goddamn table. Roger, what are you talking about?
Peter killed one of the Indians. A young man. It happened not long after we passed their village.
That's a lie.
I thought you said you hadn't seen any Rees before.
Well, we didn't stop at their village. We saw it before we got there, and we were afraid of them, so we went around. They didn't see us. Didn't know we were there. We moved on, and the next day, when we were stopped at noon, Peter went out to do some hunting. We wanted some fresh meat.
And instead, you ran into an Indian.
I didn't set out to hurt anybody.
You just tell me what happened, and don't leave nothing out.
I was walking through some trees along a creek, and then suddenly there he was. He looked savage, like he wanted to kill me. He had bones in his hair like those others, and he was carrying a bow. When he saw me, he said something. I didn't understand him, of course. And then he reached behind his back like he was reaching for an arrow. You have to understand, I thought my life was in danger. I thought he was going to get an arrow and shoot me.
Uh-huh. So you shot him first.
I was defending myself. My rifle was ready, so I just lifted it and pointed it at him and pulled the trigger. Ball hit him in the chest and knocked him back into the creek. I pulled him out, but it was too late. He was dead.
You want to tell me what he had behind his back?
A couple of rabbit carcasses on a string. I think he was going to offer one of them to me.
Yeah, I expect you're right. As a rule, the Arikara are generous folks. The fellow you shot was probably out hunting, and he asked you if you wanted to share in the game he bagged. Roger said the Indian was young. How young?
I don't know. 15 or 16 years old, more than likely. But I thought he was a full-grown man when I first saw him. I never really took a good look at him until after I'd pulled him out of the creek.
So you just blazed away and killed a fellow who didn't mean you no harm. What'd you do then?
There was a little gully close by. I put him in it and put some brush and rocks on top of him.
Hiding what you done.
I didn't want to take the time to bury him. I knew someone might have heard the shot.
The other Indians might have heard the shot, you mean?
I just thought it would be best to put him where he couldn't be found easily. And it wasn't totally selfish on my part, you know? I was trying to lay him to rest the best I could.
Then you went back to the wagons.
That's right.
And you told your brother and your pa and your uncles what had happened.
Not right away, he didn't. I suppose he was too afraid of what he'd done. But a day or two later, he told us. We all agreed that the best thing to do would be to go on, keep what had happened to ourselves. We didn't think it would matter once we got to Oregon.
God damn, you didn't figure the rest of the engines had come after you?
We hoped they wouldn't find the body.
Well, for a while they must not have found it. Otherwise, your wagons wouldn't have gotten such a big lead on the war party. Took time to find the body and then locate your trail. But now that you got a Ricker is looking for revenge, they don't really care which you pulled the trigger. They'll wipe out all of you in order to even the score. I gotta wonder if the dead engine wasn't the son of the chief or the leader of one of the warrior societies. That'd help explain a lot more of the determination these Reeds are showing. But that ain't necessarily the case. They value the life of any of their young men. They'll consider his murder a debt that has to be paid in blood.
God damn it! Why the hell didn't you tell me all this when I threw in with you?
We agreed to keep it our secret.
And we didn't see how telling you would really change anything. The Indians were already after us. And you seem to be convinced those first ones who attacked us weren't just a small band of renegades, Preacher. How could you have done anything differently?
Maybe I would have staked out Peter and left him for the goddamn Rees. I reckon they would have figured out he was the one to blame for the killing and might have been satisfied with torturing and scalping him.
You can't mean that.
Out here, when a fellow makes a mistake, he usually pays the price for it himself, without dragging a whole bunch of other folks down with him.
Jeffrey stepped over beside Peter and squared his shoulders, even the wounded one.
We never would have allowed such a thing. Peter made a mistake, all right, a bad one, but he's still family.
Jonathan moved up alongside Jeffrey. Simon closed ranks on Peter's other side.
How about you, Roger? You was ready to kill him yourself a few minutes ago.
They're right. As much as I hate Peter right now, I wouldn't turn him over to the savages. I just couldn't do that.
Suit yourself. I don't reckon they'd take him now anyway. There's been too much fighting. Too many of them been killed. For them, it's all or nothing now.
You mean...
Either we die, or all of them do.
Inside the wagon, Angela Galloway had listened to the men talking, and though she wouldn't have thought it possible, her loathing for the man she had called her husband grew even stronger. Peter had slept with his brother's wife, possibly even raped her. Now Angela discovered that he was a killer as well, the murderer of an innocent young man. His impulsiveness was liable to cost them all dearly. The other engines wouldn't turn back. They wouldn't give up. The Ricker intended to kill them all. Angela brushed a hand over Dorothy's forehead. The poor woman was colder than ever, and when Angela checked her pulse, she found it weak and rapid. Despair gripped her. Despair for Dorothy, for John Edward, for Nate, for her own children as well, because all of them were threatened by the weather and the engines. If any of them survived, it was going to be a miracle. But Preacher was still with them, Angela reminded herself. And if anyone on this wild frontier was equipped to work a miracle, it was the man called Preacher.